Sounds True presents Take Time for Your Life with author, workshop leader, and personal coach, Cheryl Richardson. And now, session one. Would you like to change your life with Cheryl Richardson? Would you like to change your life? If you're like most people, you're tired of the frenzied, fast-paced information age. You probably feel stressed out and overwhelmed, exhausted from day-to-day living, up at 7 in the morning, home at 7 at night, needing to be there for the boss and the co-workers and employees during the day, and then home at night for family. You may feel drained by people, places, and things, and you long for something more. You long to live a life that honors your true priorities, the kinds of things that really matter. Based on my experience of working with hundreds of people, most of us live our best lives in our head. We have this little fantasy, this inner nagging voice that says, oh, I'd really love to be planting that flower garden, but I never have the time. Or someday I'd really love to start my own business, but that someday keeps getting pushed further and further out. The inner voice might say something like, I really long for a romantic partner in my life, but I don't have time to take care of myself, let alone anyone else. All of us have these hidden desires or longings, the kinds of things that really represent our best life or an authentic life, and often they keep getting put in the back burner. Most of us are tired of settling for less, and I'd actually like you to start settling for more. In this Take Time for Your Life program, I'm going to show you how to do just that. I'm going to show you how to take the practical steps necessary in order to honor the things that are most important to you. Based on my work, as I said, as a coach over the last several years, I've learned that there are common obstacles that prevent people from living the lives they most want, an authentic life. And during this program, I'm going to share with you some of those obstacles and, most importantly, the solutions that will help you to overcome the obstacles. You might be surprised throughout the program that the focus of our work together is going to be a lot more about removing things from your life instead of adding things from your life. The more we make the space and eliminate the clutter or eliminate the draining relationships, the more we remove the kinds of things that consistently have us honoring everyone else's priorities but our own, the better the chances are for our authentic life to unfold before us. So before we get into the program, I'd like to just tell you a little bit about myself and a little bit about my background. I began my work as a personal coach more than 15 years ago without even realizing it. I grew up in a family business. My father was a tax consultant, and he started a business in our home when I was about 14 years old. My first job was to keep my six sisters and brothers quiet while my father was working in the living room. And I watched my father from the ages of 14 to 16 as he built our business and was fascinated by the kinds of interactions that he had with clients that would come into our home. At 16, I asked my father if I could begin apprenticing with him. I wanted to learn about the kind of work that he did. And so he began to teach me the IRS tax code. And since I was blessed with a photographic memory and a great aptitude for numbers, I was able to pick it up pretty quickly, and at the age of 19, I became a partner in his firm. Now, we did taxes back at a time when people did tax returns instead of computers. And so I had the pleasure of sitting with clients for 2 to 3, 4 hours at a time, learning about the intimate details of their lives. As a matter of fact, when I look back then, I learned my first most important coaching skill at that time, and that was to create a safe place for people to tell the truth about themselves. Because it's when we tell the truth about ourselves and our lives that we're actually able to begin living the lives that we're really meant to live. So I would create this safe place, and people would come in and they would share with me intimate details of their lives. I would certainly learn about the amount of money that they made. I'd learn about where they spent their money, how in debt they were, the kind of medical situations their families were faced with. I would learn about things like whether or not they had any losses throughout the year or how successful their businesses were. And eventually, over time, They also talked about things like life issues in addition to financial ones. They'd want help in preparing for their child's education. They'd talk about when the best time to buy a new home might be. Sometimes business owners would come in and they'd talk about their fear or their concern about raising their fees on their products or services because they needed to support their families and yet they were afraid that they might lose customers. Clients would come in and talk about relationship problems that they were having. Many times I sat across the desk of a husband and wife who were divorcing, trying to do that in a respectable and honorable way. More and more, clients would begin to talk about areas outside of the financial arena. And as I continued my work as a tax consultant, I realized that it was this life planning part of my work that I enjoyed the most. So after about 6 or 7 years of doing the tax work, I decided to leave the numbers behind and instead focus in on the part of my work that I really loved. When I originally left the tax business, I called myself a business counselor. But then in the early 90s, a reporter from a local newspaper decided to do a story on my work, and she called me a coach. And I remember thinking that that was the perfect name for the kind of work that I was doing. I really wanted to help people develop and grow themselves in addition to developing the lives that they wanted or the businesses that they wanted or the careers that they wanted. A couple of years later, I'd be introduced to a man by the name of Thomas Leonard, who had actually begun to develop a coaching curriculum and a practice of his own, helping people to plan their lives. He did his work over the phone and was able to work with people throughout the country. And learning about that way of doing business opened a door to a whole new way of life for me. And I began calling myself a coach formally and developing a telephone-based practice. So what is coaching? Coaching is a partnership between two people. Much like we hire a personal trainer to help shape up our bodies, you can hire a personal coach to help shape up your life. I like to think of my work this way. When I'm working with clients, I listen very carefully for what a client's soul is saying. You know, that inner part of us, what I call our wise self, that always has our best interest at heart. I figure if I can hear what a client's soul is saying, and then help them to create actions to honor that voice, they can begin to live an authentic life, a life based on what really matters to them. So as I went on to do my work as a personal coach, I learned one very important thing, that a high-quality life has a lot more to do with what we remove from our lives than what we add to it. As a matter of fact, in talking with individuals and in speaking with audiences, I often use this analogy to demonstrate what I'm talking about. When we're born, it's as if each of us represents a unique and beautiful painting, and the wear and tear of life quickly covers that painting up. Negative comments from people as we grow up, social influences, educational influences, fear, challenging relationships, the boss that drives you crazy, all of these things very slowly cause us to shut down and in some ways cause this beautiful painting to get covered up. What I've learned in my years of coaching is that the best thing that I can do is help an individual to very methodically and simply clear off that painting. During this program, I'll be your partner to shape up the life you already have and to begin to let go of the kinds of things that really prevent your best life from shining through. And my only agenda is your success. And as your coach, I'm going to give you practical steps that you can take to start transforming your life. So that means it's important for you to get ready to take action. Coaching is all about action, taking the actions that will change your life. You see, the truth is, most of us know what it is we really want to do or what we really ought to do in order to improve the quality of our lives. It's doing it that's the problem. This is part of the reason why the profession of coaching has grown so rapidly. More and more people are realizing that by having a partner on your side, somebody who cares about you and is going to be there for you and hold you accountable to the things you say you're going to do, having this kind of presence in your life can make all the difference in the world because you start taking action, the key to changing your life. So I can't emphasize that enough. Your willingness to take action and your willingness to create the space in your life to take action is going to be fundamental to this program. As a matter of fact, let's talk for a moment about the difference between coaching and therapy. Therapy is the closest model we have to coaching, but there are important differences. Coaching is always focused on action. It's about where you are today in the present, what you'd like your future to be like, and the steps in between. Coaching is not about processing the past, healing emotional wounds, or certainly diagnosing mental illnesses. Let me give you an example of the difference. Let's imagine that you're a client who has started a business, and you have some fears and concerns about your ability to make the business successful. You notice, for example, that the thought of marketing your services or your product makes you feel anxious and uncomfortable. So you find yourself procrastinating on a regular basis, and you never seem to make the sales. Well, you might decide to work with a therapist and begin exploring those things from your past that might be preventing you from taking action, you know, some of the emotional blocks or the issues that have occurred before that might be getting in your way today. Sometimes that's a necessary thing to do, and oftentimes I've referred clients to therapists when it's important for them to begin to explore the past and the emotional issues involved. On the other hand, once again, as that business owner, let's imagine that you decide to work with a coach. Together, you and I would look for your unique way of getting your word out about your products or your services. Then, we choose some specific small steps that you can begin to take in an effort to market your products or your services. You'd commit to those actions, you'd take those actions throughout the week, and then when we met again, we'd look at what worked and what didn't. And we'd take the things that didn't work and refocus your efforts, and once again, we'd choose new steps for you to take. By doing this, the focus is on developing new skills, developing you, and developing your business. So you can begin to see that therapy is often more process-oriented. Let's talk about how you feel and let's analyze what's going on, whereas coaching is more action-oriented. Let's try a few steps, see what works, see what happens, and then go from there. There's lots of different reasons why people might hire a coach. For example, some of my clients want to create more balance between their work and their family lives. Some clients discover that as their businesses go through a high growth phase, they start to suffer from the stress of success. Some clients want to improve the quality of their life at work. They might want to learn new skills so that they can be more effective, or learn to relate better with coworkers or their boss. And then there are those clients that long to fulfill a secret dream, like sometimes I would be working with an at-home mom who had the secret desire to write a book, and I would support her in writing the book. Sometimes someone working for corporate America had the desire to start their own business, and so I would help them to start the business and support them as the business would take off. Sometimes people who have started their own businesses wanted to get back into corporate, and so I would help them to make that transition. In my work as a coach, I've worked with all different kinds of people, people from all different walks of life, CEOs, moms working at home, business owners, corporate employees, consultants, lawyers, doctors. Although the reasons that clients hire a coach may be different, there's often a common underlying desire that's shared by all clients. That common goal is that everyone wants to live a life that honors what really matters to them. They want to live an authentic life, a life based on who they really are. They were tired of living a life based on everybody else's needs and priorities. And so within 2 or 3 years of this kind of coaching, I decided to focus on work-life balance issues, helping people to achieve the professional success they desired without compromising their quality of life. Over the last 15 years, I've learned a lot about what prevents people from taking time for their lives and honoring their true priorities. In the beginning of our work together, many clients will tell me that they can't afford to live lives that they love. I tell them they can't afford not to. Their excuses seem real and insurmountable. Sometimes a client has unique limitations that other people don't have. Clients will say that their cost of living is too high, they can't afford to make the changes necessary to live a life based on their priorities. Some people are just exhausted. They're so tired of the fast pace of life and they feel like they have no energy to take action or to make the changes. There are clients who say they're too old or they're too young, it's too soon or it's too late. And then ultimately, we often get to the most crippling excuse of all. Sometimes we believe that we're victims of circumstance, that we're powerless to change our lives. We all have choices about how we live our lives. Making the decision to change your life starts by making a personal choice. Too often we get so wrapped up in the busyness of our lives that we forget that we're the ones running the show. Now, there are certain obstacles that can prevent us from living a life that honors our priorities. As a matter of fact, over the last 15 years, there are specific obstacles that I've found time and time again prevent people from being able to make the choice, to make the kind of choices that will allow them to improve the quality of their life regardless of their situation. So let's talk about some of the common obstacles that I've found prevent people from living the lives they most want to live. There's 7 of them. The first obstacle is that we still think that selfish is a dirty word. We have a hard time putting our self-care before anything else. It's the care of our souls, the care of ourselves, that we consistently put on the back burner, taking care of everybody else's needs before our own. The second obstacle is that our schedule doesn't reflect our true priorities. As I said earlier, we get so busy and caught up with the craziness of our lives that we just keep putting one foot in front of the other without really stopping to think about whether the actions we're taking are honoring our true priorities. We find ourselves exhausted at the end of the day or at the end of the week without ever having enough time left over for what really matters to us. The third obstacle is that adrenaline has become our main source of fuel. As a matter of fact, adrenaline has become the drug of choice in America. In order to get us through our busy days, we use caffeine, sugar, and our body's fight-or-flight system to fuel us in order to get things done. Eventually, the use of adrenaline takes its toll and prevents us from taking time for our lives, the very thing we all wish we could do more of. The fourth obstacle is that we feel drained by people, places, and things, and end up with not enough energy at the end of the day to do what we really want to do. We don't have any energy left over to make the kinds of changes we need to make. Obstacle number 5 is probably the most popular obstacle of all, and that is we feel as though we can't afford to live the life we want to live. We're trapped by money. A lack of financial reserves makes it feel impossible to make the kind of choices we'd most like to make. The 6th obstacle is that many of us in our busy, hectic day and age are missing a supportive community to guide us and to nurture us in making the changes necessary to improve the quality of our lives. And finally, the last obstacle is that our spiritual well-being consistently seems to get last place in our busy lives. The time that we spend honoring our soul and listening to our inner wisdom, our wise self, gets put aside because of our busy schedules. When these obstacles are dealt with, life begins to fall into place. You start to feel better about yourself. You have more time for your life. You begin to gain clarity about what's really important. And then a funny thing happens. You actually begin to attract better things into your life. Let me give you an example of what I mean. I was working with a client by the name of Nicole. Nicole came to me feeling frustrated, saying that there was something missing from her life. She said that she really wanted to make a difference in the world. She was searching for meaning and some kind of fulfillment. Nicole thought that she'd find this meaning and this fulfillment in a new job. So she asked me to help her reevaluate her career and find a job that would add more meaning to her life. Well, often we look to add things to our lives in order to improve the quality in some way. We've been trained to think that by finding a new job or finding the right relationship, buying that new car or getting that raise will actually begin to give us the meaning or the fulfillment that we long for. But the truth is this. The meaning and the fulfillment that you long for comes more from what you remove from your life than what you add to your life. And in order to really make a difference in the world, you need to start by making a difference in your own life. As I explained this to Nicole, she felt a little nervous and a little impatient, but agreed to trust me. And we started to really take a look at the quality of her whole life. We looked at her relationships. We looked at the things that were draining her energy. Nicole began to look at the state of her financial health and certainly her schedule, how she was spending her time. And as we began to work together over the next year, Nicole started to make some major changes. She started to pay attention to how she spent her time. And consistently, week after week, she would take chunks of time out of her schedule and set them aside just for her and for her self-care. Now, Nicole was also a pack rat. She kept a lot of clutter and papers and things and stuff from her past in her life. And she began to slowly go through these piles of papers and old boxes and the things that she held on to in an effort to clean out some of the clutter in her life, to increase her energy level, and to also make space for some better things to show up. Nicole invested in her financial health. She started to make sure that her checkbook was balanced and that her bills were paid on time. She began to pay attention to where she spent her money and started to save money consistently. Nicole, most importantly, began to deepen her relationship with herself. As she took time out of her busy schedule to spend time with herself, to eliminate the energy drains, to start taking good care of herself by taking care of her money. As she started to assess her relationships and invest more deeply in the people that mattered, she started to feel better about herself. And because of that, people started to notice changes. Her friends said things to her like, "Gosh, you seem a lot happier," or, "I don't know, there's something about your energy that's really shifted." And Nicole found that she actually began to draw things into her life, things that she hadn't even considered before. For example, Nicole loved children. When we first began working together, Nicole was working as a graphic designer. And as she was going through this process of clearing out her life and taking really good care of herself and really re-engaging in a relationship with herself, Nicole was offered a job as a director of a children's educational center. This job would allow her to use her creative talents as a graphic designer and combine them with her love for children. As Nicole began working in this new job, she began to really feel as though she was making a difference in the world. By making a difference in her own life, she was then able to find the meaning and the fulfillment she desired and impact the world in a much better way. So as I said earlier, after working with hundreds of clients, I've learned that a high-quality life, a life based on your true priorities, has so much more to do with what you remove from your life than what you add. When you take time for your life and focus your attention on improving the life you already have, the life you're meant to live unfolds before you. And when this happens, you begin to make a higher contribution to the world. You care more about yourself, you respect yourself more, and you naturally begin to care more about others. You have a respect for your own personal physical space, your workspace, and that naturally translates into respect for your environment, the world at large. I remember when I first began working on these kinds of things in my own life, really making my self-care a priority, honoring the things that were important to me, eliminating the energy drains in my life. I found that the kinds of things that I used to be lax about in relation to my environment, like recycling or buying environmentally sensitive products, were some of the things that I did every now and then to be a good citizen. But as I improved the quality of my life and respected my environment more, I naturally respected the world more and found that I couldn't not recycle, or that buying products that honored the environment became more and more important. This is actually one of the most powerful things about the profession of coaching. As we help people to invest in themselves and to care more about the quality of life that they're living, we naturally help people to care more about the quality of the world we live in. And that provides us with opportunities to really have a dramatic impact in the world. So let's talk about the goal of this program. I'd like to help you overcome these obstacles so that you can build a strong foundation and begin living a life that honors what's personally important to you. By committing to doing the work outlined in the program, I'm confident that you'll begin to attract great things into your life, the kinds of things that will help add meaning and fulfillment. Here's what we'll focus on during the program. The first thing we'll focus on is the practice of extreme self-care, making you and your life your top priority, kind of like putting yourself on the top of your to-do list. In order to live an authentic life, you must make your own self-care your top priority in order to get to what it is that's really true for you about the life you want to live. So we're going to look at practical steps you can take to honor your extreme self-care, and very quickly, you'll learn that in honoring your extreme self-care, it actually becomes the best thing that you can do for other people in your life as well. To do this, you're going to need to kick the adrenaline habit. Most of us are rushing from one appointment to another, frantically trying to meet the demands of work, the demands of family. Our lives feel chaotic. When we finally have some time to slow down, we don't know how to slow down. Our bodies seem to be almost revved up all the time, and we're not able to actually sit and relax. Meditation is absolutely impossible for someone who's running on adrenaline, as an example. So we're going to look at what are some of the specific practical ways that you can begin to slow down, become more present, and tap into what it is that's important to you at this time in your life. Next, we'll focus on getting your priorities straight. We'll look at how you actually spend your time and the kind of changes that you'll need to make so that you can begin to honor your top priorities. Then, I'll help you eliminate the energy drains. We'll look at the people, places, and things that consistently drain your energy and come up with practical ways that you can handle those energy drains once and for all. And you'll begin to discover that as you start to eliminate the things in your life that are draining your energy, whether it's the office that looks like a bomb went off in it, or the car that needs to be vacuumed out, or the closets that are filled with stuff you haven't seen in years, as you start to eliminate these energy drains, not only do you have more energy, but you actually begin to create the space in your life for better things to show up. Next, we'll deal with money. I'll show you the kinds of changes and steps that you can take to begin to feel less trapped by a lack of financial reserves and begin to bring more money into your life. Then we'll focus on your relationships. Not only will I show you how to build your community, how to add new people into your life to support you and nurture you, but I'll also show you how to deepen the existing relationships you already have, both how to assess the relationships you currently have in your life, ways that you can begin to either change those relationships, enhance them in some way, or complete them if necessary, and sometimes it is necessary. And then we'll also look at how to take your relationships to a deeper level, how to move below the cocktail level of life to a more intimate way of communicating with others so that you're able to experience the richness that comes from deep connection. And certainly, I'll help you to honor your spiritual well-being. I'll show you ways to begin to take consistent time in your life to honor your soul, to listen to that inner voice so that your life begins to reflect who you really are. And finally, we'll talk about the importance of celebrating your success, rewarding yourself on a consistent basis for the changes that you're making. I'll make sure that you know some of the early warning signals, a way to kind of test the quality of your life, to make sure that you're staying on track and moving in the right direction. And I'll answer some of the commonly asked questions that people have about coaching and about this process. The process of overcoming these obstacles and completing these steps is intentionally simple. There's less need for analysis because the focus is on action. As you do things differently in your life, not only will you be growing a great life, you'll be growing a great you. In order for you to get the most out of this program, you'll need to prepare well. So here's some of the things I'd like you to do. First of all, I'd like you to buy yourself a journal. And don't just buy any journal. I'd like you to really take the time to go out and pick a journal that really feels special. Think of it as a companion, someone that's going to take this journey with you. Throughout this program, I'm going to be giving you specific actions to take. I'll call these actions field work. And you'll want to use your journal for this field work and to keep track of your progress. Next, you'll need to find a partner. Remember, I said earlier that the reason coaching is so powerful is because we have somebody with us along the journey. I'll be your coach, and I also want you to have a partner, someone who is committed to improving the quality of their life as well. Throughout the program, I'll be giving you field work to do, so you'll want to have someone to support you, hold you accountable, and share the journey with you. Remember, it's what you do differently that matters the most. Make sure when choosing a partner that you choose someone you can trust, someone who's willing to take consistent action. Be sure that they have the time and the desire to commit to the process of completing the program. You don't want to get halfway through and then lose your momentum. The third thing I'd like you to do is take out your calendar and block out 1 hour a week to spend with your partner, either by phone or in person. You'll use this time to discuss the topic and to support each other with the field work that you'll be doing throughout the program. You'll also need to take additional time during the week for the field work, but don't worry, this is time that I'll help you find. Once you have your hour a week set aside, listen to one session of this program and give yourself plenty of time to complete the field work before you go to the next session. The field work is designed to be simple. I'll outline simple action steps that have the greatest impact on improving the quality of your life. Be sure and do this work at your own pace. You can always return to this program to take your work to a deeper level over time. As a matter of fact, most people find that they actually go through a sort of gradual, step-by-step process. So just start slowly. You can always revisit the program to take your work to a deeper level. Remember, you're not just changing your life, you're changing you. Learning to take time for your life happens one step at a time. The important thing is to keep taking action. Let's get started.
We continue with session two, the practice of extreme self-care, with Cheryl Richardson.
The first step in creating a life that honors your true priorities is to put yourself at the top of your to-do list, to practice extreme self-care. I learned about the importance of self-care early on in my career. As I mentioned earlier, I used to work as a tax consultant, and I worked in a family business. The hours were long, and the work was stressful. I generally went into work at about 8 in the morning and stayed until well after 9 o'clock at night. During tax season in particular, I usually skipped lunches and sometimes even supper. My life felt like one long workday after another. And then, in December of 1984, I received a phone call from my mother at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was sound asleep and I remember banging my head against the wall as I picked up the phone. And I heard my mother crying and trying to say something on the other end of the line. I immediately got that knot in my stomach that we all get when we're afraid that something serious has happened. And in between her sobs, I could hear her say something about a fire. When I was able to calm her down, she informed me that our family business was in flames. I jumped out of bed and threw on a sweater and pants. I remember throwing on my shoes without any socks and running down to the car. It was freezing out, probably 20 degrees, and I jumped in my car and took off, scraping the ice off my windshield while I was driving. When I got to the scene, it was pretty chaotic. There were emergency vehicles and people everywhere. And as I pulled up closer and got out of my car, I could see in the distance our building completely immersed in flames. As I stood there watching the building burn, I thought of my father and began to frantically race through the crowd trying to find him. It's funny how during a crisis, certain images freeze in your mind forever. I can still remember seeing him standing on the stoop of a building across the street, self-consciously wiping tears from his face. Together in a state of shock, we watched as firefighters tried to recover pieces of anything that could be saved. My office was located on the first floor and had a wall of windows that looked out over the street. Now I was actually looking in, watching my artwork, my desk, my phone, all of the things that were really the lifeline of my business, disappear before my eyes. Watching the fruits of my labor dissolve so quickly taught me some important lessons. First of all, I learned that life as you know it can change in an instant. One day, the projects that are so important or the client's needs that got to be met by 5 o'clock seem to be your top priorities, and suddenly, all that matters are the people that are in your life and the fact that everybody is safe. In some ways, I feel fortunate that I got this lesson early on. I saw firsthand how fragile life is and how important it is to pay attention to how we spend our time. I suppose a fire is like any natural disaster. It puts you in touch with how quickly life can change. As the days passed and we began to assess the physical damage, I found myself pining over objects on my desk in the same way that people would pine over special mementos in their home. And I think it was then that the reality hit me that in a lot of ways my office had become my home and that my life had become my work. Too often it takes a personal crisis for us to stop and take a serious look at how we're living our lives. A diagnosis of illness for us or a loved one, a natural disaster like an earthquake or a flood, makes us stop and really reevaluate what's most important to us. Well, before you're faced with a personal crisis, I'd like you to stop now and take a serious look at how you're living your life. I want you to begin to practice what I call extreme self-care, my basic coaching philosophy. Extreme self-care is the foundation of an authentic life. In order to live a life based on your inner truth, or what I call your wise self, you need to be able to hear it before you can honor it. Our wise self is the part of us that always has our best interest at heart, our inner wisdom, or what some people might call our intuition. It's the part of us that reminds us of the things that are important to us. Learning to listen to that inner voice, our wise self, is the key to living an authentic life. And practicing extreme self-care allows you to begin to hear that voice. I use the phrase extreme self-care for two reasons. First, to get your attention. In our busy world, with our crazy schedules, we sometimes need to take radical action in order to care for ourselves, hence the word extreme. Too many of us are constantly juggling appointments, caring for the needs of others, and never seeming to have any time left over for ourselves. The other reason that I use the phrase extreme self-care is because it seems to have some kind of a medicinal quality to it. I find that when I first begin working with a client and I introduce them to the concept of taking extremely good care of themselves, it seems to give them permission to make their self-care a top priority. Practicing extreme self-care can be as simple as buying yourself fresh flowers every week, or as challenging as saying no to a request from a family member. It means caring enough about yourself to do what it takes to honor you moment to moment. I was first introduced to the concept of extreme self-care by Thomas Leonard. He modeled self-care in a way that I had never experienced before. He seemed to be able to put his needs before anyone else's without any guilt. He continuously set boundaries and made choices in his life that allowed him to do what he most wanted to do. At the time that I met Thomas, I was living everybody else's life. I was working from 8 in the morning until 8 at night, sometimes later. Because I was self-employed, I often worked on weekends, and the stress was beginning to take its toll. I never felt like I had any time left for me. I felt exhausted a lot of the time. I began to lose my natural enthusiasm for life, the sense of excitement or adventure that used to be there before it got covered up under all of the responsibilities and day-to-day tasks and to-do lists. I wanted to take more time off. I wanted to spend more time with my loved ones. I wanted to be able to explore other areas for my work. I wanted to be able to focus on my health, take better care of my body, and meditate and visit my inner world on a more consistent basis. And all of that kept getting put on the back burner. My first wake-up call was when our building burnt down in 1984, and I wish I could say that I heeded that message and went on to take really good care of myself. I paid attention for a while, but slowly found myself falling back into the trap of working too much and putting everybody else's priorities before my own. When I met Thomas, I was exhausted most of the time. I found myself feeling resentful when a family member would ask me to do something, or when a client would make an extra phone call. And it was when those things started to happen that I knew I was in trouble. Now, I'll tell you, it wasn't easy, and it was pretty scary, because as I slowed down and as I started to say no to things in my life, I began to get afraid that everybody else was getting ahead and I was going to be left behind. I'd find myself afraid that other people were going to take great ideas and run with them and I'd lose out or I'd be missing opportunities. And fortunately, I had a coach in my life who really supported me in holding on through the fear and trusting that if I practiced extreme self-care, if I continued to make the things that were important to me a priority, that my best life would unfold, and it certainly did. And I think it was Thomas's modeling of extreme self-care that began to help me to see that taking care of myself was actually a great gift that I could give to others. Little did I know that years later, I'd not only be practicing extreme self-care, but I'd be teaching others to do it as well. As I began this journey of making my self-care a priority, I started to pay attention to what I really wanted. I started to ask myself, what's important to me at this time in my life? I also started to notice how my body felt when I made decisions. When someone asked me to do something, I stopped for a moment and began to check in and ask myself whether or not this was really important to me. These kinds of simple behaviors were new to me. I was so used to impulsively saying yes to a request of my time or my help. You know, I'd dive in head first to help someone before I realized that it wasn't something I really wanted to do. As I started to take more time and begin to give myself permission to practice extreme self-care, I began to get in touch with the things that I needed to have in my life in order to be my best and to do my best work. For example, I began to notice that things like beauty and space in my schedule were actually requirements in my life. Having flowers around, having what I call visual clarity, a peaceful place without a lot of clutter, was important to me. Having space in my schedule so that my appointments weren't crammed, one backed up against another, but instead having lots of space in between appointments, space in between my traveling and the commitments that I made. These kinds of things, these ways of practicing extreme self-care, were the kinds of things that allowed me to settle more into myself, to settle more into the life that I really wanted to live. You see, that's what extreme self-care is. It's about learning what your requirements are. What do you need to have in your life in order to be your best, in order to do your best work, and in order to honor your true priorities? The first thing we need to do is start to pay attention, to raise our sensitivity level. That's what I mean when I talk about listening to your body. You know, in our culture, most of us live from the neck up. We're shut off from our bodies and how we feel. We're so bombarded with information that we end up thinking all the time, analyzing things, trying to figure things out, instead of stopping, slowing down, and checking in with how we feel. Because it's how we feel that adds richness to life. So how do we start that process? How do we actually begin to slow down and check in with our bodies? One of the biggest challenges to practicing extreme self-care and learning to slow down and check in with how you feel is the overuse of adrenaline. Over and over, clients would tell me about how they'd like to relax and slow down, and yet they never felt as though they could. As a matter of fact, sometimes clients would say, you know, when I do have an extra evening to myself or an extra hour during the day, I always want to fill it up with something. I want to keep busy. I want to be doing something. The idea of slowing down and not doing anything at all feels like torture. As I listened to clients talk about how they couldn't slow down, I'd hear all of the common symptoms of how adrenaline is used as a form of energy that eventually backfires. Here's some examples of the kinds of behaviors that we sometimes engage in that keeps the adrenaline flowing. See if you can identify with any of them. Do you check your voicemail or your email several times throughout the day? And when you do that, do you notice that you get a little hit of energy when you're doing it? Or have you noticed that when you do have the time to just kick back and relax, you can't do it? Instead, you're always fidgeting or getting up to do something, maybe going back into your office to just do one more piece of work. Or I remember one client who told me that every time she had some time to herself to just sit down and relax, she'd have to go into the kitchen and clean out a cabinet. Sometimes you might find that you wake up in the middle of the night, unable to get back to sleep, with thoughts racing through your head. Or do you ever have trouble falling asleep when you go to bed at night? Have you ever noticed the constant hum of anxiety or a rushing feeling in your body? Maybe you feel exhausted most of the time, even depressed, as though you can't do one more thing. You might find yourself grabbing junk food, even though you'd really like to eat something healthier, just to get that quick hit of energy so that you can continue on with your day. These are the kinds of things that we do that contribute to using adrenaline as a form of fuel. In order to live an authentic life, you'll need to shift your energy into the present. When we're running on adrenaline, we're often thinking about the next thing we need to do, the next place we need to go, or the next person we need to call. But the richness of life lives in the present moment. So you'll need to get comfortable with slowing down. As you start to slow your body down and come into the present moment, you'll find that you're able to fuel your life with a different form of energy, the kind of energy that comes from taking really good care of yourself and honoring your well-being. At first, this might be quite challenging. When you've used adrenaline for quite some time, it can feel as though the body is like an engine that's revved too high. Fortunately, there are some specific practical steps that you can take to begin slowing down. Let me share some of them with you. The first thing you might need to do is get a physical. Sometimes, if you've been using adrenaline as a fuel for way too long, your body's energy reserves may be depleted and you might need some kind of supplementation. The next thing you can do is start to slow down in simple, practical ways. For example, talk slower. Walk slower. When writing, write slower. Start to slow down in simple ways. Pay attention to the little things that you do throughout the day and do them more slowly. As you become conscious and aware of slowing your body down, slowing your speech down, you'll find that that revved up engine starts to kick back a little. Taking deep breaths is another way to slow your body down. A good deep breath in through the nose, all the way down into the belly, and out again slowly through the mouth can do wonders in helping to calm the body's fight-or-flight system. Take a warm bath. We live in a shower society. Most of us never take the time to just relax in a nice warm bath. Do yourself a favor, and if you haven't taken a bath in a while, just give it a try. Light a few candles, maybe add a little essential oil, and notice what it feels like to just slow down. The reason a hot bath can be helpful is because the warmth of the water can make it easier for you to sit still. Sometimes I recommend that clients use relaxation tapes, and I usually recommend that they begin by using short relaxation tapes, maybe 15 or 20 minutes. Relaxation tapes can be a wonderful way to begin to train your body to slow down when it hears certain words. By using a relaxation tape once a day for about 2 weeks, you'll find that you can be in the middle of a traffic jam, late for an important appointment, and simply repeat a couple of words or phrases from your relaxation tape and completely eliminate the anxiety or the stress you feel while sitting in traffic. Remove distractions so that you begin to protect your peace of mind. For example, shut the ringer off on the phone. Choose a certain amount of time either during your workday or in the evening when you're home where you'll be surrounded by peace. A ringing phone is a call to action for most people. Turn the ringer off. Create visual clarity. As you step into the rooms that you spend a lot of time in, notice how busy the walls might be, or whether or not there's any clutter that distracts you and raises your anxiety level. We'll talk more about eliminating that clutter later on in the program. At work, you might want to shut your office door, put a little do not disturb sign so that you know you'll be able to relax and focus on your work. You see, when we know that somebody might come waltzing into the office at any moment or knock on our door, it still keeps that anxiety level raised up a little bit too high. And do yourself a favor. Check your voicemail or your email at predetermined times throughout the day. Instead of randomly going back and forth and distracting yourself and raising your adrenaline level, decide that you'll check email or voicemail when you get into the office in the morning, maybe once at midday, and again before you leave. This is another great way to start eliminating that anxiety and using a healthier form of fuel. Stop rushing. Start to arrive early for your appointments. As a matter of fact, open your appointment book and ink in times around the appointments that you have scheduled so that you can show up refreshed and relaxed. And finally, give up the juggling act. Stop trying to do several things at once and teach yourself to do complete work. As a matter of fact, for a very long time, I had a sign in my office that said, "I do complete work," because I found myself shuffling from one task to another and never getting anything completely done. When we try and juggle several projects at once, or when we try and do several tasks at the same time, all we do is keep our anxiety level raised, and it makes it much more difficult to focus in and complete something. So begin to incorporate that mantra into your life. I do complete work. Once again, this is a process. It will take time for you to learn to slow your body down. Learning to kick the adrenaline habit and use a healthier form of energy is a physical, emotional, and spiritual process. We need to start to think differently. We need to start to pay attention to how we feel. And we need to do things that will address the physiological aspects of using adrenaline. If you practice some of these steps, I'm sure that you'll find you'll start to be able to slow down and take time for your life. It'll become easier to connect with your wise self, and you'll begin to develop a sensitivity to how your body feels. Practicing extreme self-care happens in stages. Over time, you'll get better and better at making choices that are in your best interest. This is all about taking the time to honor yourself. Remember, you're putting yourself at the top of your to-do list. It's about slowing down and taking time out of your busy schedule every week and dedicating it to you. So let's remember, a high-quality life starts with a high-quality you. That means that you'll need to make extreme self-care your new standard for living. Saying no unless it's an absolute yes, choosing to spend your time and energy on the things that bring you joy, and making decisions based on what you want instead of what others want for you. It's a challenging concept for most. It can feel a bit scary, even offensive at first. You might feel like selfish is a dirty word, or you may be so busy taking care of other people's priorities that you don't seem to have the time to take care of your own. Chances are you might feel guilty. But I say guilt is good. When you start to feel guilty, it means that you're on the right track. I want you to put your arm around that guilt, welcome it aboard, and continue to practice extreme self-care anyway. Because as you do that, as you take really good care of yourself, you'll find that you have more energy and enthusiasm and desire to be there for others in a healthier way. After all, if we continue to do things for people out of guilt and obligation, we're not doing it out of love. And most of us would want to know that the person sitting across from us is there because they love us and they care about us, not because they feel guilty or obligated. And here's the best reason of all for practicing extreme self-care. When we practice extreme self-care, it's as if a divine power rallies behind our desire to honor our soul and begins to make our life easier. When you begin to filter your choices through the lens of extreme self-care, you ignite a spiritual force that will support your efforts. Let me give you an example of what I mean. I was working with a client named Melissa, and she had hired me because she wanted to learn to set better boundaries in her life. Melissa owned her own business, and one of her clients consistently interrupted her personal time. He would sometimes call her in the evenings and on the weekends, and Melissa said that she felt intimidated by him, that she had a hard time saying no and asking him to not call her during the times that she wasn't working. When I asked Melissa to think about what would be honoring her extreme self-care in this situation, she stopped for a moment and thought about it, and said that, truthfully, letting this client go completely would really be honoring her self-care. So instead of dealing with the symptoms of trying to set boundaries with this client, I suggested that we go right for the source of the problem and honor her extreme self-care. I asked Melissa what she needed in order to let this client go. And she said that she wanted to be able to let the client go in a graceful way that honored their relationship, but that didn't leave any room for discussion. Helping Melissa with the language that she needed to communicate this message gracefully and providing support before and after the phone call were the things that she needed to take this difficult step. When the morning came for Melissa to call this client, she felt a little nervous, understandably so. But we talked beforehand, and I assured her that we'd talk again after she made the phone call, once again honoring her self-care through the process. When Melissa called the client, he immediately said to her, "Oh, I'm so glad you called. I was just going to call you." Melissa said, "Really? Why?" And he said, "Well, I wanted you to know that I've decided to leave the company, and you'll be working with someone else." Now, Melissa said that for a split second she felt disappointed because she had done a lot of preparation for this phone call. But that disappointment passed very quickly. She was actually pretty surprised. But I wasn't. Because time and again, as I've watched clients take the difficult steps to honor their self-care, that divine power steps in to support their efforts. So these are the kinds of things that will begin to happen in your life as you start to make your extreme self-care a priority, and I want you to watch for them. Pay attention to the little synchronistic events that occur that seem to be magical coincidences, but instead are really the divine telling you that you're on the right track. So, how will you begin to practice extreme self-care in your life? First of all, I want you to take some time out of your busy schedule every week just for you. Now, I know I've asked you to set aside an hour for the work that you'll be doing with your partner, but this time is a little bit different. I want you to think of this time as sacred time, time that you'll dedicate to your self-care. Set aside a morning, afternoon, or evening, and use this time to begin reconnecting with yourself and your inner wisdom, your wise self. You'll be using this time to get to know yourself better, to begin to think about what your priorities are at this time in your life. You'll be using this time to reconnect with yourself, to reconnect your head with your body so that you're able to pay attention to how you feel. Remember, I said that one of the ways that you'll learn to make healthy choices is by raising the sensitivity level that you experience in your body so that you know what feels right to you. It's important to begin developing that sensitivity in your body because as you do that, you'll start to get clearer about what you really want to do versus what you don't really want to do. You'll be able to make simple decisions based on the feelings you have in your body. For example, it might be as simple as deciding which movie you might want to see, or whether or not you want to have dinner with a friend, or whether or not a certain client feels like the right client for you to take on. You see, what I want you to do is begin to develop a sensitivity to how your body feels, so that if somebody asks you to do something and you feel a tightening in your stomach, you begin to recognize that, oh, maybe this isn't something I want to do. Or if a friend invites you to the theater and you feel this rush of excitement, you realize, yes, this is an absolute yes. This is something I really want to do. It's the feelings that we have in our body, the tightness in our neck and shoulders, or that queasiness in our gut, that will help us to begin to make the best choices for our life. So this is the first step in practicing extreme self-care. It's about taking that time out, that sacred time just for you. So during this time that you spend, this sacred time taking good care of yourself, it can be a great opportunity to start using your journal. Journaling can be a wonderful way to reconnect with yourself and start to get in touch with what's important to you at this time in your life. I'll be asking you to identify your priorities later on in the program. So this might be a great time to use your journal as a way to open up a dialogue between you and yourself and you and your body. The next step in honoring yourself is to begin to filter your choices through the lens of extreme self-care. You can begin to do this when faced with a decision by simply asking yourself the question, what would be taking extremely good care of myself in this situation? Think of it as taking your temperature, checking in and noticing how you feel before you make a decision. Awareness is the first step. As you become aware of extreme self-care as an option, you'll start to notice where it applies. So begin to ask yourself that question with even the simplest decisions, like whether or not to go to a movie with a friend, whether or not to start a project. Awareness is the first step, and as you become more aware of extreme self-care as an option, you'll begin to see where it applies. The last thing I'd like you to do to begin practicing extreme self-care in your life is to give yourself a gift. Get a massage or send yourself some flowers. Take the afternoon off and see that movie you've wanted to see. Just pick something that you've been meaning to do or that you've wanted to do and give yourself the gift of doing it. Sometimes when I ask a client what kind of gift they could give themselves, they have a hard time coming up with an answer. Sometimes when we're so used to putting everybody else's priorities before our own, we forget what's important to us. So here's a way to determine the gift that you might want to give yourself. Ask yourself this question. What's the one thing I could do for myself that would make me feel guilty? Remember, I said that guilt is good, and sometimes using that question can help identify that one special thing that you've really wanted to give yourself for a long time. It might be the gift of a massage, maybe an hour and a half massage. Or it might be that you decide to send yourself a bouquet of flowers. I remember when I asked this question of one client, she said to me, "You know, I've been wanting to go to the beach for the last 6 months, and I just haven't allowed myself to do it." That's the kind of thing I want you to do for yourself. I want you to pick that one thing that you haven't allowed yourself to do and finally do it. So these are some of the ways that you can begin to practice extreme self-care in your life and call in that divine force that I've spoken about. Remember, this is a process, and if you already have a busy life where you feel like your schedule is hectic, go slowly. It's going to take time for you to begin to slow the body down and begin to use a healthier form of energy to fuel you instead of adrenaline. But the most important thing is to simply get started with some actions that will honor your self-care. So let me give you some field work. The first thing I'd like you to do is to make sure that in your calendar you set aside the sacred time that we talked about, and I'd like you to do that in ink. Open your calendar, and for the next 6 months, I'd like you to ink into your schedule your sacred time every single week. The next thing I'd like you to do is to choose a couple of the examples that I shared with you about slowing your body down and begin to shift from adrenaline to a healthier form of fuel. You might want to get a relaxation tape, or you might want to try the hot bath. Remember to breathe deeply. Just choose a couple of items and begin incorporating them into your day-to-day life. The third thing I'd like you to do for field work is I'd like you to make 3 or 4 signs that simply say extreme self-care. And I'd like you to put one sign in your office, another sign in your bedroom, maybe a sign on the dashboard of your car, so that you begin to bring that phrase into your life so that you can remind yourself that your self-care is now a priority. And finally, the last piece of fieldwork that I'd like you to do is I'd like you to consciously practice using the filter of extreme self-care when making decisions throughout your day. Remember, when faced with a choice or a decision, simply ask yourself, what would be taking extremely good care of myself in this situation? So as you begin to practice these steps of extreme self-care and learn to slow your body down, you're on your way to building a strong foundation for a life that will honor your true priorities.
This concludes part one of Take Time for Your Life with Cheryl Richardson. Our program continues with part two.